The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
So here to discuss it is David himself, president and founder of Encima Global. He's also former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, joining us on the Ring Central phone line. Good morning, David.
Hi, Vonnie. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello there.
How are you doing?
Well, we're doing great. So we've got lots to talk about and plenty of time. Let's start with the jobs report itself. We did have, you know, moderate jobs growth. People coming back into the labor force helped push the unemployment rate back up a bit. Participation rate rose. What do you see?
Yeah, I've got. I'm sorry. On the participation rate, I like that it was up a little bit. But the bigger news is that the household survey was up. You know, the government takes two surveys: one where they survey companies, existing companies, and then a separate one where they phone people and mail them and ask whether they're working. And that survey tends to pick up inflection points or upward movement because it's people that otherwise wouldn't get picked up by the government. You wouldn't know they're out there unless you were reading their emails or something. And so these people showed 319,000 new jobs in May, and it was 293,000 in April. So whatever is happening when people are asked, is someone in your household working, they're giving a more positive response than they were, much more positive than they were in March.
And David, we can also say with this report that all the statistical anomalies are sort of out of the way now, aren't they?
Yeah, though I do think the weather has been a factor. You know, we've got cool weather, and that slowed the first and second quarter, and it's extending even now. So that holds down sales a little bit. But one encouraging sign in this morning's report is average weekly hours worked was revised up for April. So one of the bad signs in the April report was that it had fallen to 34.4, meaning people working fewer hours. That got revised up, and it was matched in March at 34.5. So that's good for the amount of pay that people will get, a little bit better, and that's been one of the big problems in the economy.
And I'm looking through the report with you again, David, you get these little pieces of on the margin, a little more improvement, not huge, like, oh, wow, what a great report. But the number of discouraged workers declined again. Job losers, not quite as many. Job leavers are rising. That's also a strong sign, right? There are so many things that suggest on the margins a steady employment. Let's labor market's getting a little bit better all the time.
Yes, so this kind of glass half full, half empty is frustrating to people. My thought is if we don't do better than we're doing, then we're going to sink back down. We've got to start getting more job growth, or else it's not enough to keep us going and, importantly, not enough to keep Europe going. Right now, Europe has put all of its eggs in our basket, meaning they're saying that they're going to have a stronger second half because the U.S. is going to start growing. And if we don't, then Europe's in real trouble, which I think is one of the downside risks in the outlook. My own view is that we do have enough signs of a pickup that we'll be able to lift Europe a little bit in the second half.
So what are you looking at in terms of seeing momentum in this report then, David? Hours worked a little bit higher, perhaps job leavers rising a little bit. What else?
Yeah, and simply this household survey itself being as strong as it is, 319,000 is a good number there. So that's it in this particular report. But then in recent days, we've seen the leading economic indicators, for example, was up strongly in April, which is nice. The housing sector continues to do decently. The May non-manufacturing ISM report was up a bit. And, you know, it's much bigger than the ISM. So an issue going on in the economy is manufacturing is not picking up, but other parts of the economy seem to be doing better. So admittedly, this is a little bit reading the tea leaves, and we don't have enough signs of strength yet to be able to say, well, you know, the economy is lifting off. Two things that are helping the economy, though. The tax code is less uncertain than it was in 2010, 11, and 12. Remember, in those years, always overhanging the economy was the idea that there would be a big tax increase. And then second is private sector credit has finally started growing. We now have two quarters, the fourth quarter and the first quarter, where there was more credit in the economy than before. This was one of the anomalies from 09 to 12 that there just wasn't more credit in the private sector. My view is the Fed was sucking it into the government. So their policy, I think, is quite harmful and took credit away from the private sector, which didn't see any growth in private sector credit until now. Finally, we're beginning to get little signs of a little uptick there.
Where are you seeing that? What metrics are you looking at?
The Fed produces a flow of funds report. It just came out yesterday, and it showed some continued growth in the first quarter after a larger chunk of growth in the fourth quarter. So what that basically means is corporations are issuing more bonds, and then the money filters down. In my Wall Street Journal article last week, I called it trickle down. I don't like the policy that they're doing. I think we would have had quite a bit faster growth and a lot more jobs if we'd gone another route, meaning allowing the market to allocate capital rather than having the Fed do it. But even so, the marketplace is finding a way for money to trickle into the economy, and that's a positive sign.
Let me ask you about that, because you're not the first person, although one of only a couple, who has suggested, and I don't know if you mean the same thing, that the monetary policy the Federal Reserve has followed has been trickled down. I think it's also viewed in that context, well, if you're going to push money into riskier assets like stocks, most people don't own stocks. So you're helping only that part of the economy that owns stocks. The lower mortgage rates, because banks turn the screws on credit creation because they're reluctant to give mortgages to people who don't have great FICO scores, for example. People with great FICO scores who probably don't need to refi after a while can refi time after time. People who really need it, underwater, all that, have not. That, in that sense, someone else has called this a trickle-down monetary policy. Is that this? Give us more on why you call this trickle-down.
Okay, that's part of it. It's clear the Fed is helping the rich. But in Wall Street Journal articles in 2009 and 2010, I laid out the basis for this, that they're actually rechanneling credit that would have gone to small businesses and job creators, and they're pushing that credit into the government and big corporations by holding the rates down. It's specifically how the Fed is, it's not only that it's helping the rich, it's that it's hurting smaller businesses and the people getting left out of the labor
force. What is the mechanism, David? Explain that to people, how keeping the key rate at zero, buying bonds, et cetera, is pushing this cheap, very cheap money, dirt cheap money to the big corporations, not the small business.
Right. So anytime you set a price, rather than letting the market do the price, you get a concept called rationing. So if the government set the price of gasoline, let's say at $2, somebody would get cheap gasoline. That'd be great for that rich person or well-connected person. But there would quickly be shortages of gasoline because people wouldn't produce it or bring it to market. And that's what's happened with credit. The Fed set the rate below a market clearing rate. The 0% rate is too low. And so the people who are connected can get the money. And that means the government always gets first dibs. That was all laid out in an 09 article in the journal. And then in 2010, I did another one predicting that we would get slow growth because of the Fed policy. So I really think it needs to be re-examined and rethought. The Fed has never claimed it's creating more credit in the economy. It just says it's giving lower interest rates to one group of people within the economy, hoping that they will pass it on to other people.
But David, when you say you need to be connected, what do you mean by that? Because if the money is there, it's there for everybody, right? Everybody can benefit from low rates.
No, clearly not. There's been this big problem for people trying to get mortgages, whereas big corporations are able to issue bonds very easily within this environment at very low rates. So the existing credit in the economy was rechanneled to bigness. And that was very predictable based on the Fed setting a price too low for credit, intervening in the marketplace. And then in addition, by buying directly the bonds of only certain issuers, you know, the Fed doesn't go buy loans that are made to small businesses. It's only buying loans, government bonds and corporate bonds, or excuse me, government bonds and Fannie and Freddie bonds for the government-sponsored enterprises. And so that supports them, but it comes at the cost of other credit in the economy and also of savers.
Well, that's interesting, because when the Fed was running all of its emergency lending programs, and it seemed that we weren't getting much traction, or they weren't, there were suggestions to do this kind of thing, right? To have a special program where the Fed might have either lent directly to small businesses or perhaps even buy the loans made to them. But they didn't do it.
Well, and I think that would be another terrible mistake to have our government is already very, very involved in trying to make loans, which is really a private sector activity. They do it through the Small Business Administration, through the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense, and there's a plethora of government programs aimed at making loans. They're not very good at that activity, so I'm not suggesting it. I'm simply saying it should be pretty clear to people that if the government if the Fed only lends to the government, and there's no more credit in the economy that's been created, that it's going to come from someone. And in this case, banks made fewer loans to small businesses than they would have, and originated fewer mortgages than they would have done if they hadn't been guiding the credit to the government and big corporations.
Now, it is something that the Bank of England is doing, and it seems to be working, right, David?
No. Now, the Bank of England has tried kind of a pilot program of lending to small and medium-sized enterprises directly through the government, but I would say that it has not worked very well at all. The European Union is considering some kind of program, but getting lots of pushback for exactly the reasons that I said, that it's just the government doing more and more activity that of necessity should be done by the private sector. Otherwise, why wouldn't we have the government be the bank for everybody in an economy the way, say, China used to do?
So let's take a look at where we're going next, because the Fed will taper off. The question is when they will taper off. Eventually, this program won't even exist. So I guess you'll say that will be good for the economy.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen now? The consensus today seems to be, oh, well, this doesn't make much difference to the Fed yet. What do you see?
Well, and I've been talking about this really for a couple of years, that the Fed has set a benchmark for itself in terms of the low unemployment rate. But since the Fed itself is a big part of the drag, you never quite get there. There's a catch-22 here. The government is saying, we're going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger until the private sector employs a lot of workers. And the problem with that is you never get to that point. And so that has led to QE 1, 2, 3, 4. We're in 4 now, and they now have a dial where they can keep doing it as long, as many years as they want to do it. Remember, this has been done before. Japan did QE in 2002 through 2004. It was a miserable failure. The IMF wrote report after report why it simply doesn't help to have the central bank buying government bonds. So there shouldn't be any surprise. It was a bad idea. It hasn't worked. You've gotten the predictable results, which has been weak growth in the economy. I think finally the economy is finding ways to get around that by finding other channels of lending than the ones controlled by the government.
David, what did you make of market reaction in the last few days? We had a big sell-off in credit markets, a bit of a liquidation the other day.
Yeah, now I've been quite bullish on what's going on, because I think we are starting to see growth. So by rights, the bond yield should have gone up and did go up. And so I think that all confirmed the improvement underway. And so the the 10-year yield had simply gotten very, very low. I did a report on April 30th saying bond yields too low. So I think the sell-off that we saw in May was fine. It moved things back. And now both the equity market and the bond market are waiting to see signs of growth. So in today's report, there were a little bit of growth signs. So the equities are up, recovering from losses in the last couple of days. And the bond yields are up. That all makes sense. I also like that gold is going down, has been going down. You know, one of the problems with the economy in 2010 and 2011, and again, I did Wall Street Journal articles on this, was the high price of gold. With our clients, we talked about it being artificial because some people were thinking that the Fed was printing money, so that pushed gold to a very high level. But as it comes down now, that's kind of a signal that there's less perceived risk from what the Fed is doing, from the wildness of the Fed. So you don't have to own gold as a hedge. And gold is a very harmful dead end for investment. It doesn't produce anything. So it's good to see that price coming down today, too.
David, I'd like to get a more specific sense from you of, regardless of the rightness or the wrongness of it, the Fed, what do you see the tapering off plan or path to be? What's going to happen next and when?
I think the Fed is cultivating maximum uncertainty onto the economy. So each 6 weeks, people will go in trying to figure out what they're doing, and they won't know. So I guess my thought is the economy is going to strengthen some, and so we will see the Fed taper, say, in starting in September or something later on. But the Fed's not going to signal that ahead of time because they're waiting to see the data, and they kind of like the situation where everyone in the world focuses on them.
Well, thank you so much, David Malpass.
Okay.
Very, very helpful.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.